Blog Talk Radio.
Jacob.
How you doing, Julian?
And we also have featured columnist, writer from Bleacher Report, Max.
How you doing, Max? I'm all right.
So today we are going to first start off with the referees, and just a late breaking news alert to our audience that the regular referees will be back in action for this upcoming weekend. So first off, Sean, I want to get your reaction on what do you think about them finally getting this all finalized, and also what did you think about what transpired Monday night?
All I can say is hallelujah and good riddance to them replacement officials, because let me tell you something. As far as Monday night goes, that was an absolute shame, a travesty, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it was absolutely, you know, unbelievable that one official could have one signal, or the side judge could do a touchdown signal, the back judge comes over and says, touchback interception, and the white hat, the referee, or as they call him, the white hat, didn't sprint down the field and get his opinion of what did you see from both the side judge and the back judge, get their two sides of the story. He just ran to the replay booth he ran to the replay monitor under the hood to review the play as soon as he was buzzed by Howard Slavin, the replay official. And him being a regular referee and the league, I can't fathom how they could miss a blatant call like that. Well, especially there should have been two or three penalty flags, they said, thrown on Golden Tate for pass interference. So, again, that was just an absolute travesty for the Green Bay Packers. Not that I'm a Packers fan, but I'm just saying, waking up, falling asleep, and waking up in time to see that ending, it was an absolute travesty for the league. And I had to tell you, if the league did not agree to a contract with its referee, with its locked out referees, I wouldn't have been surprised if sooner or later you would have seen players, coaches, even fans starting to boycott games. I mean, there's just too many missed calls. And just to give you an idea real quick of how many missed calls in the Sunday, or how many penalty flags rather, in the Sunday and Monday night games combined, there were 48 penalty flags. 48, 24 of which in the Monday night game totaling 245 yards, I think.
All right. So we want to get to our guest now, Sean. So, Jacob, I know even though you mostly talk about basketball. I mean, did you get a chance to find out about what has been going on with the referees as of late?
You know, we're all football fans. You know, we cover basketball. I still root for a football team, and unfortunately, that football team is the Miami Dolphins. So that's another topic for another day. The whole officiating thing is interesting because I think it sheds light more so not on the bad calls, and they're horrible. We see it, but to me, it's the overanalyzation of words in a rule of the game. Where in the league backed it by analyzing a rule, and I think the league it's lost its touch when it starts, having lawyers write up the rules as opposed to just letting these guys go out there and hit each other. That's what we want to see. We want to see hits. We want to see big plays. We're not here to analyze rules and bend the rules, and that's a lot of reasons why, people don't like this team like the New England Patriots, because they read those rules and they interpret them in that way, like the famous Tuck rule. And just because the new ref, not the new ref, but the locked-out refs are coming back, doesn't mean that football is going to be back to 100% great. I mean, before the lockout, there were still issues with officials and the way they interpret rules, the whole pass interference and hitting a quarterback, above the waist or, torso only. It's become such a baby league, and I'm a fan of defense, so over the years, I've lost interest in football prior to this. This is only helping.
Well, at least the games won't be taking as long. If you notice, the replacement refs had to go over to the official on the field, the on-field refs, to get explanations for the simplest of calls, and it was causing games to run 10 minutes longer on average from last year through the first 3 weeks. So, it's I'm glad that the regular refs are coming back.
Yep. What about you, Max? What do you think about the refs and now they finally have all this finalized?
I mean, we're all evaluating this one play, but the truth of the matter is, this is a pure symbol for the era. There's no question about that. But if you think that that's the first time two referees have had conflicting signals, I mean, you're out of your mind. It happens almost every single week. Now, the magnitude of the play, that's different. But in their defense, we're all latching onto this one play. The truth of the matter is, it's not this one play. It was the entire game. It was the entire 3 weeks. And the problem that I really had is, look at the play that should have ended the game when the Packers intercepted the ball the first time right along the sidelines. And they called a roughing the passer call on a play that really, there was no violation. The quarterback was brought down by the legs, and he was brought down the second he threw the ball. It wasn't a late hit. It wasn't a flagrant hit. It was a regular play. Meanwhile, the game should have gone on, and that interception should not have counted because Clay Matthews actually did rough the passer on the final play of the game. So the point is, these referees aren't just tarnishing the image of the league with one call here. The fact is they're unqualified, and we have all this news coming out about specific referees who were let go by the Lingerie Football League, who couldn't qualify for Division I football refereeing, and who are fans of specific teams. And to me, I'm not as much worried about the refs. I'm more worried about the NFL, because that to me tells me they don't care. They didn't go out and get qualified people to do this job in the absence of the referees. If they had done that, we might not even be having this conversation. But they went out and got people who really had no business being on a football field. Forget about NFL, they couldn't even qualify for Division I college football. So you're taking these bottom-of-the-batch people and giving them the ultimate responsibility, and we all said, one day this is going to cost someone a game. And for the first time, we saw it happen, and fortunately, it's going to be the last time it happens.
Yeah, I see. Well, if you have to hear from me, I mean, personally, I thought it was just such a terrible call. Especially how they mishandled it all. And so, even if you listened in on what Aaron Rodgers had to say about all this drama going on with the refs as of late, I mean, he said live on some radio show that he would just, it's just unacceptable for the game of football and the fans. And so, I was just very, very ashamed by that. But now since they have finalized, that is great for the league and fans. So now I understand we all are going to touch on basketball now, and I just want to let the audience know that this is Debate Wednesday, so we are going to debate on very, very, very good questions relating to basketball today. So the chat room is open. You can follow us on Twitter at SKBT Radio. So let's get started with some basketball now. First of all, let's talk about the Lakers. I got to ask you guys, but do you think the Lakers are a very, very good contender out in the West this year? We'll start with you, Jacob.
Well, I mean, it seems to be the trend this summer going into the preseason in a couple of weeks is that, you know, the Lakers are the first team to be talked about, and rightfully so. They got the big ticket item with the Dwight Howard trade. But to me, the title still goes through Miami, and I come from an old-school mentality that to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And as great as the Lakers are, we've seen a lot of great teams over the past, including, if you remember correctly, the 2004 Lakers, who seemed to be unstoppable. They won the title the year before. They were coming back, and they got Carmelo and Gary Payton, and they ended up losing to an underdog team like the Detroit Pistons. And that's the beauty of basketball. It's always teams. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Princeton offense works with Steve Nash involved and how much, you know, of one basketball can all those stars share, and that's what they're going to figure out. Whenever you come together with a group, you're going to have to sacrifice. We saw it with Boston in 2008. We saw it with the Miami Heat the last couple of years. When you have a lot of stars, there's only one basketball on that court, so it's going to be very interesting to see how it all gels. But if you had to ask me, are they the favorite in the West right now? I think they are. I think they have bumped up over Oklahoma City Thunder, but you know, maybe that's exactly what the Thunder need, to be back to the underdog status where, you know, those young kids over there, and they are kids, they're all under 25 years old, basically, on the Thunder, and, they, you know, they're second-best team. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, those two meet up in the Western Conference Finals, as most people are picking.
What about you, Max?
I think what everyone's really forgetting about the Lakers, I mean, you hear all this praise because of the star power. What you're really forgetting is that they touched on every single weakness that roster had last year, the past 2 years. They needed shooters. They got Jody Meeks and Steve Nash, two of the best jump shooters in the NBA. They needed a player at center who wasn't going to take plays off, and that's what Dwight Howard is. You can talk about whatever you want pertaining to his requesting a trade and his behavior there, but when he's on the floor, he is the most dominant force in the NBA, not named LeBron James. And that's a fact that no one can deny, because he's one of the few players who can dominate a game without ever touching the ball. So you look at the way they constructed their roster, and, you know, defeating the Heat, it's obviously the task. It's the task at hand, but, you know, the Heat have their own problems. You know, the Boston Celtics, they're not a bad team. They took them to 7 games with a relatively weak roster. You look at it, and Paul Pierce was fouling out and getting into foul trouble. Rondo and KG were on point, but you see Pierce is out, Ray Allen is injured, and they're still taking them that far. The Indiana Pacers almost eliminated them. If they had any offensive plan, they probably would have. So the Heat aren't invincible, and that's what people need to realize. If the Knicks, you know, people write off the Knicks, but, you know, if somehow, some way, Amari and Melo form this chemistry, look at that roster. You know, right now it's all paper, though, and that's what the issue at hand is. It's all paper rosters. How are they going to play? And to me, the best paper roster in the NBA is the Los Angeles Lakers, because they have Steve Nash, who is, aside from Rajon Rondo, is the best facilitator in the NBA. He knows how to get players to play in harmony, and I think the Lakers' chemistry issues, that won't be a problem. Nor will having a group of winners on the roster, where you have Kobe, you have Pau Gasol, you have Nash, you have Dwight Howard. These are consummate professionals who know how to play the game.
Now, I got to hop back in there, because you made a couple of statements there which I don't think are fair to the Miami Heat. And a lot of people have that same mentality there that, you know, an injured, depleted Boston Celtics took them to 7 games. Well, don't forget, the Miami Heat were also injury depleted. You know, Mike Miller has never been the same, you know, with his back injury year in, year out. And don't forget, Chris Bosh was not in that Indiana Pacers series at all. I believe he played 1 game. And so you take any star player, so, you know, use that argument, take Dwight off the Lakers, where are they? Or, you know, take Kobe off the Lakers, where are they? Because essentially Chris Bosh is a fantastic basketball player, which is, it seemed to be lost when he went to Miami. And, you know, granted, he had a lot of off-court stuff. He does a lot of stupid things, and he's kind of a bozo in the eyes of most fans. But there's a reason why he got signed max deal, and there's a reason why Pat Riley approach him. He was an MVP candidate when he was in Toronto the year before. He decided to, you know, take his talents to South Beach or LeBron. So I wouldn't, you know, call this Heat team a weak team. I think that if Chris Bosh was healthy throughout the playoffs, that the Celtics would have been eliminated in five. I think the Pacers probably would have brought him the six still. But then they added three-point shooting, Rashard Lewis and Ray Allen, and to me, they filled their holes as well. So I agree that the Lakers filled the two holes that they needed, point guard center, and I also think that Miami Heat filled a couple of holes that they needed in three-point shooters who can space the floor for LeBron and Wade to create their own shots.
I'm not going to argue with you on that point. I don't think the Heat are a weak team. They remain the best team in the NBA until the championship is taken away from them. And if you have LeBron James on your team, you're almost guaranteed 60 wins in the first place. My
yep.
point is, the one player who has always given the Miami Heat problems over the past 2 years is Dwight Howard. With very little else in Orlando, Dwight Howard has always given them problems, whether beating them during the regular season or just proving that he can take them down to the final minutes. Now Dwight Howard has some of the greatest players in the NBA. He has arguably three of the top 25 players in the NBA, if you still believe in Nash and Pau Gasol. That's debatable, but they're that caliber. So, to me, the best paper roster is the Los Angeles Lakers. I know what the Heat got. I'm not denying them, and being the second best paper roster is nothing to frown upon. But we're talking about Rashard Lewis and just saying, you know, he went to a great team, so he's going to play great again. That's no guarantee. It's not as if he just didn't live up to the hype of the max contract that he got. He just wasn't a good player the past few years. And I believe in the guy's ability, but until he proves that he can play, there's nothing to be excited about. And Ray Allen, the greatest three-point shooter of all time. But how do we know that he can recover from this injury? Just like we questioned Derrick Rose's ability, we have to look at that. I'm not doubting that the Heat can run through the Heat could run through the Eastern Conference without losing a game. They're that talented. But the Eastern Conference just got a whole lot stronger this year because the Heat still do not have a center. So what happens if they run into a Philadelphia team that suddenly is shooting the lights out with them and Andrew Bynum matures in the way that we've all expected him to? The Heat are the favorites because they won the title and because they have LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, let alone a handful of other sharpshooters. But it's not a guarantee anymore. And I think the past 2 years we've almost said, yeah, I mean, they're going to make it. They're just going to make it. It's a tough bracket to go through.
Oh, I mean, it absolutely is a tough bracket, but you got to use your same logic if you're going to talk. You know, it's not a given. You know, you got to earn it out there. And I think, you know, new teams that come together, they get that culture shock right away. And that was what was so surprising in 2008 when the Celtics really didn't have that. They went on a tear, and I think at one point they were 22-2 or something crazy like that. But, you know, that was something that just doesn't happen. But going back to what you said about Ray Allen is, yeah, Ray Allen was injured last year, but he still played through it. And the thing to me about Ray Allen is don't look at his first game, or amount of shot attempts. To me, what impressed me with Ray Allen's game last year was his efficiency. He shot the ball better in his career than he ever has. So to me, that was interesting. And so I think if he brings those percentages, even if they dip a little bit, it's still much better than what they were having up there with Norris, Cole, James Jones. So I think that's how they improve. Now, you make a fantastic point about centers, but we can argue the center is a dying position in the NBA because a lot of teams, like the Boston Celtics we referenced a few times here, they don't have a center. Kevin Garnett is their center. And you can go up and down the East Coast, and Tyson Chandler, you know, he's the premier center, premier defensive center, but what teams are true centers? I mean, Brook Lopez has never impressed me, to be honest with you. He's gotten, you know, he kind of came in the league as a rookie and kind of plateaued, and I don't like those kind of players. But outside of Dwight Bynum, I mean, Phil Perkins in that discussion, and Chandler and Hibbert, I mean, who else really has a dominant center? It's a dying breed, and so the thing that's going to interest me with the Lakers and Heat, if they end up meeting, is who can control the tempo of the game. Because on one hand, you're going to have the Lakers who are going to want to run a half-court offense. They're just going to want it with Dwight. That's his specialty. Dwight's teams never get up and down the floor. They always run half-courts, and who better to have a half-court than Steve Nash? But on the other side of it, you got to have a very athletic Miami team that they can run a four-guard team out there and throw LeBron at center and just run up and down on you. Now they're going to struggle in the half-court, but it's going to be that battle of who can paces, because that is going to determine the winner of that series.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I think that's where, on paper we're speaking, that's where the Lakers have the advantage, because Steve Nash is the ultimate pacemaker. He's the kind of guy who makes Phoenix Suns players look like all-stars out there. I mean, who knows how Marcin Gortat is going to play this year, but playing alongside Steve Nash, he looked like an all-star. So, and I agree, you know, it's a dying position. The center is a dying position, but that doesn't mean that when you play an elite center, you just won't have a problem. I know that LeBron James is called this five-position player, but he's not elite at every single position. If you tell me to rank the top 10 centers in the NBA, I'm not going to put him in that. And if I put him up against Dwight Howard, I think Dwight Howard is going to make a fool of him because he's out of position. And I think if you put Chris Bosh on Dwight Howard, Chris Bosh will not be able to handle that. The reason KG can thrive as the center is because KG is the ultimate agitator. He's the ultimate defender. And that's what's always made him work. Now, as I said, the Heat, until they're beaten, they're the team to beat. And on the floor, I mean, LeBron James is just, he's a one-man wrecking machine. He's just as likely to go off for 40 points as he is for 20 assists. So, I mean, what I think everyone seems to forget is they have this guy in Miami that goes by the name of Dwayne Wade, who happens to be, even though he doesn't get the respect anymore, in terms of pure ability, he happens to be one of the top three players in the NBA, pure ability. And we all saw it. We all saw the way he took games off so LeBron could shine and get his monkey off his back. Now that LeBron is there, if Dwayne Wade is giving 100% every time out, I don't think the Heat can be beaten. And they could flirt with 70 wins this year. But if Dwayne Wade can't stay healthy, it's another story.
I'm sorry, guys, but I got to excuse you for a sec. I just want to hear Sean's perception real fast, real quick. So, Sean?
I agree with, I was listening to what them two were saying, and I agree, but wholeheartedly, but as far as the Lakers go, the one obstacle that you, I think it was Max or the other one that made a point is the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Lakers got to get through the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are the defending Western Conference champions. They're young. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, you know, Paolo Cefalosha, all those guys, you know, Scott Brooks being a great young head coach. You know, the Lakers, I do think that they, now with the additions they've made, they will beat in a seven-game series if they were to meet up in the playoffs for a second straight year. In next year's playoffs, I do think that they could beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, but I do think it would go to seven games. But as far as the Heat goes, I think, you want to know what I think? I think the Heat aren't going to make it past the Eastern Conference Finals. I think I may have to go with an upset-minded team. I think I'm going to go with keeping my eyes on Andrew Bynum. I always liked Andrew Bynum when he was with the Lakers, and now that he's a Sixer, he's a big addition. He's just as big of an addition for the Sixers as Dwight Howard was for the Lakers. So I think it could be a rematch of 2001, possibly, Lakers and Sixers in the finals. Although I'm not going to discount the Heat because they are the defending NBA champions, but I do think it will be my final four, so to speak, and early prediction would be Lakers and Thunder in the Western Conference Finals and Heat and Sixers and in the Eastern Conference Finals. And
hey, Sean, I don't want to get too far here on what we're
talking about here.
But
Lakers and Heat, I will agree with. I could see Lakers and Heat, but I can also see Lakers and Sixers, so it's take your pick is all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I just want to really just move on with a very new question now. So now, you know, since the Heat are pretty much the kings of the Eastern Conference, I got to ask you guys, but what team would you consider behind the Heat at number two? If you had to consider, we'll start with Max.
In the Eastern Conference specifically? I'd say, I mean, it has to be the Boston Celtics. I mean, no team improved as much as the Celtics so quietly. You look at their biggest issue last season, if you really look at it, they lacked depth. And you had a few nice role players here and there coming off the bench, and that's good. Avery Bradley stepped up. That's nice. But you're talking about a Heat series where their key role players are Keon Dooling and Marquise Daniels. This season, the shooting guard position alone, you replace Ray Allen with a carbon copy when you get Jason Terry. Then you throw Courtney Lee, who could stroke it from three and play lockdown defense. Then you throw in Avery Bradley as well. You also have, if he can return to form, you have Jeff Green behind Paul Pierce. You know, you have an athletic guy in Favmello at center who may not see a lot of minutes, but the athleticism alone is a nice change of pace for an aging team. So, and, you know, Sullinger and Brandon Bass, I think they can play well off of each other. There's not really much of a drop-off in terms of talent or playing style between the two. So, I mean, they have a history of giving the Heat problems. And, yeah, if you know, I mean, Doc Rivers remains one of the best coaches, if not just today, maybe of all time. And if he can get the perfect storm going with those players, if he can get them all in sync, they're going to be as tough and out as the Heat will.
What about you, Jacob?
Well, I mean, I think Max kind of just stole the thunder right there. I was going to say Celtics regardless of conference because, as he pointed out, and I'm even doing one better. It wasn't Marquise Daniels where he getting a lot of those minutes down the stretch near the end of the season. He was kind of buried on that bench. It was actually Sasha Popovich getting those minutes, and that just shows you even worse to our discussion right here. But, you know, look who they lost. They lost Ray Allen. That's it. And then they added two guys who can cover that position, one offensively in Jason Terry. We know what he can do. And then one defensively, which I think was probably the quietest signing all season, was signing a defensive player such as Courtney Lee. And I think that's tremendous. And I do got to take one side of the comment that Max made there, that, oh, Avery Bradley stepped up. That's nice. No, Avery Bradley is going to be a good player in this league. I've been a fan since he was drafted. I think his ability to play defense at such a young age is something that's very rare in the professional league these days. And it's unfortunate he got hurt because he really was the X factor. If you look at the win losses with Ray Allen in the starting lineup or Avery Bradley in the starting lineup, it was night and day. I believe the Celtics were a 500 team with Ray Allen on the starting lineup. And then once Rondo, you know, was man enough to go to Doc and say, hey, we got to start Avery Bradley, he's going to help us out much better. And that's what this whole Rondo and Ray Allen thing is comical to me because it's basketball related. Rondo went in and made a basketball related discussion with Doc Rivers. And he was right. We saw the outcome of it. The Celtics were a better team with Ray Allen on the bench and Avery Bradley starting. So I agree with everything Max says that, you know, the Celtics are the second-best team behind the Miami Heat, and they quietly built up depth, which is what they need, especially coming into an 82-game season with kind of an older roster.
Yeah, exactly. I think the most important thing is look how many Miami Heat killers are on that team. Look how many LeBron James killers are on that team. Jason Terry, don't forget, Dirk Nowitzki might have stole the thunder, but Jason Terry had some huge shots during the 2011 NBA Finals. He was just as important to the Mavericks winning the title. So he knows what it takes to beat the Heat. And from spending so much time in Dallas, he also knows what it takes to beat the Lakers. So to me, he's a real X factor. Not only can he shoot, but he's an excellent ball handler. And what a lot of people didn't really take notice of is the past few seasons he's been playing almost as a makeshift point guard in Dallas. And one of the biggest problems for the Celtics is when Rondo's not on the floor, who's going to handle the ball? Now they have
yep.
both Jason Terry and Avery Bradley who can handle the ball. And I mean, they really. I mean, you look up and down that roster, and you know, depth in the front court might be a bit of an issue. But aside from that, that team is almost flawless.
And just a
by the way, before you guys go on here, but I just got to let the audience in real fast that we're going to go in overtime here because we're having a very good conversation here. So, if you guys want to listen in on our overtime show, then please do that by dialing 646-716-5733. Once again, the number is 646-716-5733. So, let's get back to, Sean, let's hear from you.
On my second best team in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah.
I have to disagree with those guys. With what they were saying, I'm not going to discount the Boston Celtics just because they have been to the NBA Finals within the past 5 years, and Dr. Rivers is a great coach. But I also think you guys are forgetting one guy, Andrew Bynum. He is at innings young. He's youthful. As long as his knees are all right, if he's 100% healthy, and Doug Collins is one of the most underrated coaches in the Eastern Conference, maybe even in the NBA. So I think the Sixers are the second best team in the Eastern Conference right now, despite what the Celtics did in the offseason with Courtney Lee, as you guys were saying. I just think with the Sixers getting Andrew Bynum is huge. That is huge. You're getting a young center who is just as good as Dwight Howard is. So, and
Sean, to interrupt you there, but if I had to say the number two team in the Eastern Conference, I'd have to agree with both Max and Jacob, because just like they said. But, the Celtics really did a fantastic job over the offseason, I got to admit. And, you can't disregard the fact that they have – I'm just saying this in my opinion, but I believe Rajon Rondo is the best NBA point guard today. And you know what? I think this Celtics team – looks really better on paper than last year. So, hey, I'm going to go with the Celtics. And plus, I'm going to say this, but I also think that the Celtics have a slight chance at overcoming the Heat when it comes time to the playoffs.
But how could you...
I got to hop in there real quick for your buddy Sean. I actually have a writer.
How could you not get this down, Andrew Bynum?
Look, Andrew Bynum is an outstanding player, and the Philadelphia 76ers, they made some other nice moves. They got Darrell Wright. You know, he's a hated guy, but they got a Kwame Brown, who's a decent role player. He didn't live up to the hype, but he is a good role player. And they got guys like Nick Young and Jason Richardson. The fact of the matter is their roster just isn't strong enough beyond Bynum. Jrue Holiday, we still don't know if he can play the point guard position. He appears to be a slightly undersized shooting guard. Jason Richardson is already named their starting shooting guard, which Dwight Howard can attest to is not a good idea. And arguably the best player on their team, besides Bynum, is buried on the depth chart, and that's Thaddeus Young. Thaddeus Young is proven capable of playing both forward positions, yet he's going to sit behind Evan Turner at small forward and sit behind Spencer Hall as a power forward.
I just think the Celtics, yes, they lost Ray Allen, but which I don't think you can discount the Heat either with their addition to Ray Allen, but that's for another conversation. But the Celtics, they still have Paul Pierce, and he's aging, and they still have Kevin Garnett, and he's aging. So
hey, I got to interrupt you there, but did you know that the Heat are actually the second oldest team in the NBA going into this season?
Mm-hmm. Right, but as long as you have LeBron James on your team and Dwayne Wade,
This Andrew Bynum loves that.
Sean, I'm sorry, but let's hear from Jacob here. Jacob.
This Andrew Bynum loves that thing is hysterical, because I have a writer on my team who's my team, for the website, and he's a diehard Laker fan. And all he's been saying is Bynum, 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 Bynum for about 3 years now. And Andrew Bynum's a one-time All-Star, if that? And how many times is he a defensive MVP? Never. So the fact that you're saying he's just Dwight Howard is pretty laughable. He's never had any MVP votes. First off, Dwight Howard is an MVP caliber player every single year. There's no comparison. If what you said was true, Sean, then the Lakers would have never made that trade, because they gave up a lot of draft picks on top of Andrew Bynum. They gave up a lot of cap space.
Hold on. All I was saying was, yes, the Lakers gave up, one of their best young centers, but he hasn't been an all-star like you were saying, but still, he's young. That's the point I'm trying to...
You claim that what the problem is, you look at the Celtics and you say, oh, they're aging. Now, what a lot of people forget about is this. When Rajon Rondo fell down to injury at the beginning of the 2012 regular season, Paul Pierce
outside
flirting
of Rajon Rondo.
Okay, well,
look.
Here's the point. When Rajon Rondo fell to injury at the beginning of the 2012 NBA season, Paul Pierce was flirting with a triple-double every single night. The dude was putting up 20 points, 8 assists, and 8 rebounds almost. And you're looking at this guy do this, and you're like, oh, well, forget about age. You know, we put a number on it, age. Kobe Bryant is aging, but he still averages the second most points in the NBA. So as far as I'm concerned, the only number I care about are the numbers you produce. Kevin Garnett is one of the top three centers or power forwards in the NBA, whichever position you want to put him at. Because when he's faced with elite opponents, he outplays them time and time again. We could talk all we want about Rondo and LeBron. The most consistent player in that series was Kevin Garnett. Every single night out. Every single night out. And that's the problem with Andrew Bynum, consistency. Now, I remember after the first game where the Lakers played the Nuggets, he was being interviewed, and he said, you know, I just blocked 10 shots, and I know that if the Lakers want to win, if we want to win, I have to play defense. Where was your defense the rest of the postseason? If you know you have to play it, why weren't you playing it? And I know you're only 24, but you already – he's 24, and he spent 7 years in the league, 7 injury-plagued seasons. That's an old 24.
I understand the point you're making, Max, but
Sorry, Sean, but I want to get on to one more question here before we start wrapping up this show.
Let's just make one last point here. The thing with the Lakers was last year they ran into a younger team in Oklahoma City. I mean, that's why I was saying earlier you can't discount until the Lakers beat the Thunder. Because the Thunder are the defending Western Conference champions, the Lakers, they got to earn the Western Conference.
All right, so now we're going to move on here to one last thing. So I want to hear from what you guys think of what teams you think will surprise us in the upcoming season. We'll start with Jacob.
Can I pick two teams? Because this is going to get real interesting. I had one team on my mind, but after I had a podcast last night covering a certain division, another team popped in my mind. So the first one I had is I think the Toronto Raptors are going to be better than most people think. I think that, you know, the addition of Kyle Lowry, I mean, I'm not calling them, you know, fourth seed in the playoffs, but they might sneak in there, and that division that they're in, the Atlantic Division, could have 5 playoff teams. Now, probably unlikely because they each play each other, and, you know, those are losses and wins there and even each other up, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Toronto Raptors snuck in at the 8th seed. I think they have a very, very deep team. A very young team, and it's really going to be, can they click on all cylinders? So that was my first pick. But after looking a little harder around the league, another team that kind of quietly built up a nice starting five, and that's the Washington Wizards. That's a team that could sneak into the playoffs this upcoming year with those two big guys, Nene and Emeka Okoro down there and playing 4 and 5. Then you got Trevor Ariza at the 3. You got the rookie Bradley Beal playing the 2, and you know, everyone's waiting for John Wall to finally turn that corner and become the all-star that a lot of people think he can be. So that's another team to keep an eye on. So if I had to pick two, it would be Washington and Toronto.
I agree on Washington. They aren't my selection, but I agree. I think, you know, the thing that really gets to me, you know, you look at Kyrie Irving's rookie season. He puts up 18-5, and everyone's labeling him the next best point guard. There were 3 point guards in the NBA who averaged at least 16 points and 8 assists. Chris Paul, Darren Williams, and John Wall. John Wall has already turned the corner. The difference is, the only issue is, he was turning the ball over, and he had Nick Young and JaVale McGee on his team, and every pass he gave to them, something was going wrong. If you really look at the way he was playing, if you look at the quality of his assists, he was averaging upwards of 10 assists a game. He was putting up 16-10. And does his shot selection need to improve? Yes, but he's a, what, second, third-year player in the league? No one's shot selection is good at that point. The key for me is, forget about Bradley Beal. Let me say this right now. Bradley Beal is going to be a fine player. He's going to have a nice rookie season. But there's a good chance he doesn't even start. Because there's a guy who turned it on in the final month of the season. There are 2 guys who turned it on, actually. And one of them was Jordan Crawford, who was putting up consistent 20-point-per-game nights. Now, fans say, oh, I don't like him, his shot selection is terrible, et cetera, et cetera. He's more of a 6th man. That's fine, but the same could be said about Bradley Beal, because the guy can shoot, handle the ball, and play defense, but he's not a prolific scorer, and he never was in Washington. The team for me, however, getting away from the Wizards, the team that I think everyone needs to watch is the team that almost took the eighth seed in the East, and that's the Milwaukee Bucks. You're talking about, Brent, look, the Eastern Conference is not this defensive powerhouse. You have a few nice defensive teams at the top of the league, but it's almost all offense. And the Milwaukee Bucks have Brandon Jennings and Monte Ellis, two ball handlers, two 20-point-per-game scorers, and that's nice. We know that they're going to get them some wins. That basically guarantees them about 30 wins if they progress the way they should. The key for me, and I think the best draft pick all night, was John Henson. You're talking about a team who has always needed, since Andrew Bogut gets injured all the time and now he's traded, you're talking about a team that needs an elite shot blocker in the paint, and they need an athlete who can run in transition. John Henson is both of those things. You also look at Samuel Dalembert sitting in the paint now starting at the center position. You look at a consistent 15-10 guy, if not more, sometimes 20-15 from Ersan Ilyasova. The key for me, however, is a guy to watch, and I think the most improved player of the 2012-13 season will be Tobias Harris. The kid has incredible talent. He shined during the summer league, and he's just waiting for an opportunity. And quite frankly, I don't think he's going to sit too long behind a guy like Mike Dunleavy.
All right, so before we get to Sean, I just want to say my two teams here. One is the Detroit Pistons. I think the Pistons roster looks pretty good this year. I think they possibly have a shot making at least a playoff spot in the East somewhere this year. So I believe they got a good thing going on right now. I mean, Brandon Knight, he's a very good player, as well as Greg Monroe is a good player. Greg Monroe's going to have that support now with Andre Drummond in their front court. So I think the Pistons should be an intriguing team there. And also, my other team is the Denver Nuggets. I think the Denver Nuggets, they could possibly be, like, better than the Clippers, and they could, like, possibly be better than the Lakers. I'm not going to be scared to say it because I think they're very young, full of talent. I mean, they got a great coach, George Karl. So I really like the Denver Nuggets this upcoming season. But now let's get to Sean real fast before we wrap up this show. Sean?
My two teams, I'm going to stand by the one I've been saying all show. I'll give one in the East, one in the West, and my two teams are in the East, it's the Sixers, and in the West, I'm agreeing with you, Julian, 100% the Denver Nuggets, and who I believe will have the Rookie of the Year on their team, and they made, I think they got one of the best picks in the draft in Harrison Barnes. Out of North Carolina, Harrison Barnes is going to be a stud. I think the Denver Nuggets are a real scary team. They're my Cinderella, and I think they could stand up to either the Thunder or even, as you said, Julian, I'm not going to be scared to say, I think they could challenge the Lakers because of their young, youthful speed. They're just like the Thunder. So, yeah, the Sixers and the Nuggets are my two teams to watch out for this year.
Yeah, any last comments from you guys before we wrap up the show here?
I think the Nuggets are a nice team to get behind, but I think the biggest thing that nobody ever talks about is they're an offensive powerhouse that doesn't know how to score in the half court. All their points are coming in transition, and the Lakers showed how to beat them. You slow them down, and it's not impossible.
Well, I think you're going to see a breakout season from Danilo Gallinari, and that's what I think. So it was great having you guys on the show. This was very fun. We should definitely do this another time. By the way, I just want to let you know that we are going to have our own fantasy basketball league. So if any of you guys are interested, and, you know, of course, shoot me out an email.
If I can draft Andrew Bynum first, if he becomes a player, Sean says he's going to be. All right, guys, it's been real. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, guys. All right, so that about does it. I'm going to play the music here for the last few seconds of the show. So thank you for thanks to everyone who listened in on the show and listen to us this Saturday as we talk about Jim Calhoun and the MLB playoff race. So see you then.